Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, on location, but broadcasting through our studios all over the world. Today, we have two interesting situations. We're going to have a commentary from Chris Hedges, that I think that you'll find of interest, about President Trump as the quintessential American from Truth Dig. And then live for about half the program is going to be Ralph Nader. And Ralph will be discussing with us how the earlier administrations of the Clintons, Bush, Obama, opened the doors for the Trumps of this world. So they've taken no responsibility. I've yet to hear any of these talking pundits say, we messed up. We made promises we didn't keep. We abandoned the core values that we told our constituents that you should trust us. They did, and we betrayed them. Ralph Nader will be weighing in on that on the program. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. Today, from the Karolinska Institute, that's equivalent to our FDA, but honest and ethical, they talk about how green leafy vegetables can prevent liver stenosis. And a large portion of green leafy vegetables in the diet can reduce the risk of developing liver infections or fatty liver. This was established published study in the PNAS, a major scientific journal, from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. So they're saying the more fruits and vegetables you consume, and by the way, you're getting more fruits and vegetables when you juice them, as much as five times more. If you want to see the comparison, eat a bowl of parsley. Not much to it. Now, juice that same amount, a bowl of parsley, and you get like a tiny, tiny speck, just a couple drops in a teaspoon. So what if you were to get the juicing where you were having a half an ounce of parsley juice each day mixed in with your other juices? It's a diluting juice. Same with arugula and watercress. So when we do eat vegetables, we don't eat enough of them, and the studies show that the average American's not consuming their recommended daily allowance, and those recommended daily allowances are minimum. Those were politically and economically created. They had nothing to do with preventing disease. All that they assume is they will prevent classical diseases like scurvy. Well, if you ate a lemon each day or an orange, that would prevent scurvy, but it does mean you're optimally well. Anyhow, this is a good study. One more reason, eat as many, and I believe you should have 13 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. That includes starchy vegetables and root vegetables like rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, and then, of course, there must be at least 100 variety of gourds and yams, squashes, and people don't have those except maybe in season around Halloween, Christmas. We should be having them year-round. From Oregon Health and Science University, vitamin C may offset the effects of maternal smoking on the baby. Although smoking during pregnancy is reported to have an adverse effect on fetus health, a new study shows that regular intake of vitamin C by the smoking mom-to-be can help reduce harm done to infants' lungs after birth. The published study showed that after 3 months of age, infants whose mothers took 500 milligrams of vitamin C per day, in addition to their prenatal vitamin, had significantly better forced expiration flows. By the way, that's how they measure how fast air can be exhaled from the lung and can detect air, and it can detect any form of air obstruction. In addition, the researchers also found an association between the infant's FEFs and a genetic variant some of the mothers possessed that increased the negative impact of nicotine on the babies before they were born. So, here's the takeaway message. They're suggesting 500 milligrams a day. I'm suggesting 1,500 milligrams. 500 in the morning, 500 in the afternoon, 500 in the evening. A, it thins the blood. That prevents a stroke. B, it helps reduce cancer markers in the body and stimulates the percentage of natural killer cells. Those are the body's own immune cells that attack cancer. And C, it helps reduce oxidative stress. And all this was published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Clinical Critical Care Medicine. Chronic fatigue syndrome could be triggered by an overactive immune system. This is from King's College London. I was just on the phone with a writer when we were having a discussion about how many cases of chronic fatigue syndrome are really due to the human herpes 6 virus. That's a very particular virus, and we saw it in a lot of people with AIDS-defining illnesses. But they said it was only due to HIV. There are a lot of legitimate PhDs, including two Nobel Prize winners in science, who say that it's other viruses as well. They don't exclude HIV. They simply say that you're laying all these different 30 conditions on one virus, where we know that other viruses in the body, including human herpes 6, but what they left out was that human herpes 6 is also a major culprit in chronic fatigue syndrome. So we did an experiment back around 1990, and we had 1,200 persons with AIDS-defining illnesses. They were all very sick, and this is at the Tri-State Healing Center. And I met with our group of physicians and specialists, and I gave them all the scientific literature of why a particular type of zeolite and particular drinks, including bitter melon and other drinks that could help along with intravenous aqueous vitamin A, which is a water-based vitamin A. I don't even believe it's easily available anymore, plus vitamin C. And all this together, we were able to tremendously lower all their viral loads, and some of the people went completely negative on all their viruses, Epstein-Barr, shingles, all the viruses. So this has been overlooked. Well, now they're saying, an overactive immune system appears to be a trigger for persistent fatigue. Okay, when do you get an overactive immune system? Almost always when you're malnourished. You have multiple vitamin deficiencies, including vitamin D, vitamin C, and vitamin E, and magnesium, and calcium. So you're eating the standard American diet, and you're overfed and undernourished. And that's the fact of it. So when you're overstressed, chronic fatigue syndrome is common because you're constantly turning on the stress hormone fire alarm 24/7 in many cases. And that means that you're secreting cortisol, and epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, catecholamines into your blood. That means your blood sugar is going to rise, your adrenal glands are going to be exhausted, and then when you come back down off that stressful high, you're fatigued. Why do you think people generally get sick the day after they've had a major argument? Now, it's no different than if you stay up late. If you're up studying or partying, your body's immune system is going to pay a price. The next day, you're tired. You can't focus. So chronic fatigue, you're like that all the time. And they're not looking at viruses. They're not looking at rebuilding the body's immune system. They're using drugs to try to keep the body from overstimulating its immune response. It's just the opposite of what I believe they should be doing. Anyhow, for you, that's important. To know that there are many approaches to chronic fatigue syndrome, and orthodox medicine is absolutely, completely clueless about how to treat it, and yet there's a lot of success in the holistic medical field doing it. Also from the National University in Korea comes a study published in the Journal of Medicinal Food that says that yerba mate, that's the herb, decreases your risk of metabolic disorders. That's really good news. That means that weight gain, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, prediabetes, all of these could be affected if you had yerba mate, Y-E-R-B-A, yerba mate tea each day. And from Penn State University comes a study that is no surprise to anyone in this audience. It's about the lower life expectancy is likely caused by lifestyle choices. You think? Yeah. Isn't it amazing that it took them all this time and all these studies to figure this out? And yet it's right in front of everyone right there. So for the first time in two decades, the life expectancy of Americans declined slightly. And the overall death rate rose. And that's from the National Center for Health Statistics. So just while that information shouldn't alarm this audience because you're aware of it, and that's why you're making lifestyle choices, it points to the challenges in keeping America healthy. So we just continue, and I mentioned this yesterday, I'm not going to repeat that, but we go out of our way to make unhealthy choices. In fact, yesterday I was speaking with a gentleman who said, you remember that guy who did the television show called Food Versus Man? Yeah. And he would eat like 6 pounds of a given food at a time. And I said, yes. Well, he went vegetarian. And I said, that's terrific. I said, that's absolutely terrific, as long as he stays vegetarian. Because when you put 6 pounds of protein into your body, you're killing yourself. There's no other way to say it. You're killing yourself. You're prematurely aging yourself. But do the math. Let's just say that there's 28.5, let's round it off, 28 grams to an ounce. And in that one meal, if you're an average person, not this guy, you're having, let's say, a 16-ounce portion of steak. Half is going to be fat, and the other half is going to be protein. So we've got 8 ounces. So you've got 8 times 28. So what you have then is you have 244 grams of protein in a single meal. Now, let's just say that you're eating 6 pounds of that. So in one sitting, he ate 1,344 grams of protein. That's over a week worth of protein in one sitting. That could kill you. That could absolutely shut down your liver, your kidneys. So these shows, which are very popular, and here all these people always packed in these restaurants, cheering them on. You can do it. They've got 5 minutes to go, and the guy's stuffing. But if it's not meat, it's pizza. I saw once where he did ice cream. 6 pounds of ice cream in one sitting? Are you aware of the amount of calories he consumed? He consumed a week, 2 weeks worth of calories in one sitting. His blood sugar, if they took it, and I'd like to ask the producers of that food channel, did you take that person's blood sugar before he ate that food? Did you take his blood pressure? Did you check his pulse rate? Did you do a blood analysis to see what his blood looked like? I remember once at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a senior research fellow for over 33 years, we decided to see what the average American doctor's diet would do to your blood. So we got a group of people from this audience at that time, and we took their blood pressure and blood sugar, and we took a sample of their blood. And then they went out, and we had interviewed a series of doctors at all the hospitals on the east side, because the Institute was on the Upper East Side. And we got what they considered a good diet. Of course, by no measure was it a good diet. It was a garbage diet. And so we had them eat just the doctor's diet for one day. One day. And every time we would take a blood sample after a meal, an hour after a meal, their blood would go from red to an opaque color with strings of fat that you could actually see. And those strings of fat can collect together, and that's what causes a clot. So just remember when you're watching these shows, and I won't watch this one show, it's just this bizarre food with this fella, because I watched him shooting animals, killing animals, and then eating them, and it's vile. It's absolutely vile. In any case, people love it. People love the American diet, but they don't love the heart attacks, strokes, cancer, obesity, dementia, Alzheimer's, arthritis that come with it. But that is what's going to come with all those diets. So just remember, when they say, and it's, I guess maybe they do a fireworks display outside of Penn State University and say, look, we've discovered something, and anyone in this audience say, really? You're telling us that we can lower our life expectancy by making bad health choices? And that's new? The father of medicine, Hippocrates, and a man I consider more brilliant than Hippocrates was Maimonides, knew better than this. But so did a lot of the other people. Somehow they just got this. So, Americans, you are dying sooner, and your lifespan is going backwards, not forward. Also, you can lower your risk of death from cardiovascular disease with a special pigment inside of berries. This is in the University of East Anglia. And did you know that right now, as I'm speaking, 84 million Americans are affected by cardiovascular disease? 84 million. And that's what the scientific literature shows. And of course, that means you're more susceptible to having a heart attack, stroke, artery clogging, atherosclerosis. What is their solution? Colorful fruits and vegetables. Why? Because they contain a chemical called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N. And only 32% of American adults meet the goal advised by the Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion to get their fruits and vegetables. And of young people, only 13% are eating sufficient fruits. Now, this was published in the Clinical Reviews in Food Science and Nutrition, and they found that after evaluating 19 different studies involving 602,000 participants across North America, Europe, and Australia, that the anthocyanidins were the most powerful thing you could do to help prevent heart disease and cardiovascular events, including stroke and heart attacks. So what does it mean in just the simplest language that we can all actualize now? Raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, bilberries, gooseberries, plums, blue grapes, red grapes, not white grapes. And by the way, there are over 400 different types of anthocyanidins, and these are the natural pigments. These are what give fruits and vegetables their color, but they're really strong anti-inflammatory agents. In fact, there was another study with 1,900 women published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that showed that there was a direct association between how many flavonoids you take in and how stiff your arteries are, how low or high your blood pressure is, and your pulse wave velocity. So, and by the way, pulse wave velocity, that's a measurement of the waves of pressure as they move through blood vessels, and it's considered the gold standard of measurement tools to assess risk of heart disease. And so the more flavonoids you had, there's your onions, your apples, rich in flavonoids. So fruits and vegetables, and one of the highest quality foods you can consume to lower your blood pressure, blueberries. Blueberries help lower blood pressure. That's important. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. From all over the world, I'd like to welcome you. We have Ralph Nader coming up in about 10 minutes. But before then, I just want to let all of our sister station WBAI audience know that we, the station management, Bertold Reimers, has extended our fund drive one final week. Hopefully this is the final week. And so we are a little short, and hopefully today we'll make up for that. If you've noticed, I haven't pitched live once in this entire fund drive. Not because I didn't volunteer, I didn't. I gave them five new premiums, but they chose to use the older premiums, and they've done very well with them. Over 50% on some days, the funds come from that. But we have five new ones, and they're very high quality, so I'm hopeful the next drive you'll have a chance to benefit from them. But the one premium that brings in more money directly to the station and pays for more premiums than the other is our retreats. And because we target exactly how many premiums are outstanding, have not been paid for, and then we do a retreat and use that money to pay for it. So it's beneficial to the people who come. It's really life-saving to the station. It's a win-win. Our next one is going to be in April. It'll be the last week of April and the first week of May. Why? Because I'm going to be in Africa filming, and I won't get back until about the middle of the month. We are in the final stages of this major film on the environment. And each day I speak with our in-house editor, Valerie Van Cleve, and she brings me up to date on how all the film footage we're shooting the film is looking. Because we have to tell two stories simultaneously, and that is not an easy thing to do. The larger story is about what's happened to our planet historically and up till now. And then what are the myths that we're living with? All that we have 100 years. We don't have any time left. We're out of time. In fact, the deadly insect dilemma, it's not normal for up to 90% of all the species to drop dead. That's a new article in Counterpunch by Robert Hunziker, but it's true. Our insects are dropping dead. Well, if the insects drop dead, exactly how the birds and the bats supposed to live, they won't. Well, what happens to pollination, wild pollination, if they're not around? Big problems. Just like the bees. The neonicotinoids have been destroying the bees for over 30 years, yet nothing has been done to challenge them because you go to any federal agency, including the EPA, and all you've got are more and more friends of the Monsantos and DuPonts, but not of the bee. So that's what we're faced with. So anyhow, what we're doing now is simple. We are trying to show all the problems of the world. The big stories, you'll see things you've never seen before. You'll see the largest calving of an ice sheet in history. You'll see views from a little blimp, and that view will show you the tops of mountains in South America, North America, Canada, Switzerland, Sweden, Norway, and Russia that are ice-free, snow-free. Well, isn't that ice and snow supposed to help people? Yes, it is. But it's not happening. If you don't have the snow, you're not going to have the ice from the freezing temperature. You're not going to have the melt off of that over a six-month period that provides all the rivers with clean, healthy water. So then we show you the seven major rivers in that part of the world, the Mekong Delta, the Mekong rivers, and all the Yangtzes, all the major rivers in China, Vietnam, India, how they're all polluted and they're all running low. And that's not going to reverse. So we have a lot to show, but then you have to show the personal, intimate stories of people. And that's where you have to go out into the field and sit with people who no one knows about their problems. They're not going to be on any media. And you'll see they have lung cancer, they have heart disease, and right across the street from where they live, these are generally poor people, not just of color, but all backgrounds, they're poor. And the chemical companies' fumes are what these people are breathing 24/7. The water's polluted, the soil's polluted, and no one cares. The body politic in those states are not standing up for the poor. And we're not talking about a few hundred or a few thousand. We're talking about hundreds of thousands to millions per state. So that's the personal stories, lots of them. Anyhow, I'm almost finished. And by the way, the good news is that from the last drive, because of the last retreat, every single premium was paid for and sent out. So that's good. So our next one is coming up, and they always fill up. I don't like them overflowing. I like people to have quality time. It's a beautiful environment. Flowers will be blooming, eagles soaring. Yeah, you can sit there and look at eagles. And the beautiful environment, the great staff, classes on cooking and juicing and fermenting foods and growing and exercising. Great stories about exercising too, and meals that are gourmet. Last night, we met in a conference call with Leonard, who's our master chef, Connie, who is the drill and sergeant major who runs the kitchen. Get him out on the table right now. Yes. She's a drill master, but boy, everything comes out on time and everything looks great and everybody participates in a good way, and people have a chance to sit and really enjoy gourmet vegan meals, gluten-free, and cleanse and juice with some spectacular results frequently. Here are some of the people who attended, and here are just a few of their departing thoughts.
My name is Carol. I'm here at the retreat. I've had a really fantastic time. I was looking forward to it, didn't know what to expect, knew it sounded good, knew it was something that would be helpful to me, and I'm so far, I think everyone, a lot of people here seem to be so much more ahead of me as far as knowing what to eat and how to eat, but I'm learning that. Right now, believe it or not, I'm cutting sprouts in the kitchen, which is, if anybody that knows me heard that, they would think that it can't be me who's talking. But it's been really great. I think I'm learning how to eat, how to prepare things. We're doing great exercise. I'm out 6 o'clock in the morning power walking, which is just news to me. Water aerobics, yoga. It's been just a total fantastic experience. And I hope to go back, use it for me. I hope to share it with my friends and family if they'll let me. And I just feel very fortunate to be here, and I'm glad I came. And it's wonderful. The setting is fantastic, and the people are so nice, like-minded. And it's been great.
My name's Glenn, and I'd say I'm more of an application type guy. I'm always looking for what's practical and what's usable. Anyhow, I got a lot here. The grounds are beautiful. Everybody was super nice that was on the retreat, which is really important. It's kind of a good experience, but the most important thing, you know, there's the right way of living and doing stuff. It's, your life is an integrated whole. I mean, it is diet, which is crucial. It's attitude, what's so important. Gary's lectures, and, you know, I always look for stuff of substance, and I found that with Gary. And, of course, it's just a nice thing to have here and to have it as a working type thing where you can apply it. There's so many people, there's so many authors that they say a lot of words, but, you know, I'm always looking for the application portion. And Gary and what's here is so rich, and it's literally so wealthy in it. Sometimes and so often when you hear these things, you'd like to freeze frame stuff so you could just take it all in and digest it. It's almost like note-taking is just not enough. I'm definitely better for the experience. Personally, I think I'll be a better human being. Of course, that's very general. You know, I work, of course, to support my family. I've got three kids, and I think we're all going to benefit from it. I know I certainly have, and I have to thank Gary personally and all the staff for it. Thank you very much.
Those are just a couple of the people who were there. So if you'd like to come, have a wonderful experience, and for some people, change their life. give a call. Lou Ann Panessi will talk with you and see if this is right for you. Her number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And this is the only one we're doing for the year, so if you want to come, give a call. It's going to be a wonderful new year. Just after the new year, just in a few weeks, premiering two new books and three new feature documentaries. These are major documentaries. So we've been on a rip getting creative stuff done. Also in the new year, I'll be opening up a center for homeless vets, free to them, to help them get back on their feet, get their priorities straight, understand the power of the past and what they can do to reenter life and their families. Plus also, I'm now looking to open up a senior dog environment, starting with dogs, somewhere upstate New York, and where dogs, instead of being put into shelters, which many are, when they're too old to no longer run around like puppies, they should be given high quality of life, not euthanized. I'm against euthanasia. So I'm going to do that in the new year. Find a place for hundreds, if not thousands, of dogs to live out their life with joy and love and happiness. A lot of good things happening in the new year. And this retreat, for a lot of people, will be a changing point. Oh, by the way, before I take a break and then come back with a commentary, then go to Ralph Nader, for those of you who were at the last retreat, when we went on that walk, a beautiful bucolic walk, just magical, and you saw that horse all alone in that little enclosure with no barn, exposed to the element, saddleback, very, very broken down. The couple who from the church who had been feeding him, they didn't own him. They tried to buy him. The owner wouldn't sell him. They'd been there alone for 8 years. Well, three of our guests, and Dr. Steve and myself, we just said, we'll buy him. So everybody wrote checks, gave them to the people. We didn't know these people. We trusted them. I mean, if you see someone out in the woods and they're feeding a horse that's been abandoned for all intents and purposes, they get high marks in my book. Anyhow, sooner rather than later, the guy took the money. I don't know what it came to, but we also gave him a lot of money to keep it well fed. That horse now is with a lot of other horses, healthy, happy, and protected, indoor, shelter, outdoor, and a lot of other horses where you can socialize with. So I don't even remember their names, but the people who were there and who felt something, you did something. You self-actualized. People could be cynical and say, well, it's just one horse. Yeah. And it's one child. And it's one senior. And it's one homeless person. But it doesn't matter that it's one or two. Whoever you help, whatever you help, you're a better person for it. And they are better because you were there. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. And before we go to Ralph Nader, who they're getting on the line right now, I just want to share just one page of a commentary from Truthdig entitled Trump, the Quintessential American, written by Chris Hedges. And we are posting this also on PRN.fm. it's really interesting. And here's what he says, because this will flow into something that I'm sure Ralph will talk about. He says, Donald Trump is part of the peculiar breed Herman Melville described in his novel, The Confidence Man, in which the main character uses protean personas, flattery and lies, to gain the confidence of his fellow passengers to fleece them on a Mississippi River steamboat. Confidence men, as Melville understood, are an inevitable product of the amorality of capitalism and the insatiable lust for wealth, power, and empire that infects American society. Trump's narcissism, his celebration of ignorance, which he, like all confidence men, confuses with innocence, his megalomania and his lack of empathy are pathologies nurtured by the American landscape. They embody the American belief, one that Mark Twain parodied in Pudd'nhead Wilson, F. Scott Fitzgerald excoriated in The Great Gatsby, and William F. Faulkner portrayed in The Depraved Snopes Clan, that it does not matter in the crass commercialization of American society how you obtain wealth and power. They are their own justifications. American culture is built on a willful duplicity, a vision we hold of ourselves that bears little resemblance to reality. Malcolm Bradbury wrote that in America, imposture is identity, that values are not beliefs, but the product of occasions, and that social identity is virtually an arbitrary matter, depending not on character, nor an appearance, but on the chance definition of one's nature or color. We founded a nation on genocide and slavery, ravaged the globe with endless wars and the theft of its resources, enrich an oligarchical elite at the expense of the citizenry, empower police to gun down unarmed civilians in the streets, and lock up a quarter of the world's prison population while wallowing in the supposed moral superiority of American white supremacy. The more debased the nation becomes, the more it seeks the reassurances of oily con artists to mask truth with lies. Trump, like most con artists, is skilled at manufacturing self-serving news and a fictional persona that feed the magical aura of his celebrity. The showman P.T. Barnum is the prototype of this strain of Americanism. In the 1830s, he exhibited Joyce Heath, an elderly Washington African-American slave who he claimed was the 161-year-old former nurse of George Washington. When Heath lost her novelty, Barnum announced that what he had been displayed was a robot. The fact is, Joyce is not a human being, he wrote to a Boston newspaper, simply a curiosity-constructed automation made up of whalebone, Indian rubber, and numerous springs ingeniously put together and made to move at the slightest touch, according to the will of the operator. The operator is a ventriloquist. The crowds, which at their height had collectively paid $1,500 a week, then a huge sum, to see her, returned in droves to see the supposed machine. After she died in 1836, at the age of 79 or 80, Barnum sold tickets to her autopsy, which was viewed by 1,500 paying customers. Well, confidence men are adept at peddling fictions designed solely to attract publicity and belittle their opponents. Trump's demand of Barack Obama's birth certificate or Senator Elizabeth Warren's DNA test was not designed to uncover fact, but to belittle and entertain. The release of Obama's birth certificate and Warren's DNA finding did not puncture the lies. Old lies were replaced by new ones that again catered to the emotional yearnings of the mob. The tawdry rumor that Eliot Spitzer, the disgraced former governor of New York, wore black dress socks when he was having sex with prostitutes, was given currency by the political operative and Trump confidant Roger Stone, cut from the same lump of clay as Barnum and Trump. What kind of guy does it with socks on? Stone said in the New York Post, and so it goes. Just to give you an idea that Trump is an unusual persona, and it's unfortunate that he has not been shown in the way that we would better understand how he got there. Ralph Nader's on the phone now. And Ralph, in my opinion, is without a second to be one of the most influential Americans during the past several decades. He's directly responsible for many of our most important bills that have provided protection to consumers against the onslaughts of corporate short-term profits and the free market. Unregulated capitalism, landmark acts like Freedom of Information Act, the Clean Water Act, the Whistleblower Protection Act, the Wholesome Food Act, and others that have been enacted by Congress. He's a graduate of Princeton and Harvard universities. He's been a presidential candidate for 5 elections, building his platform on consumer rights, humanitarian and civil rights efforts, environmental sanity, and democratic government. His most recent book, just released this month, is called To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. Nice to have you with us today, Ralph.
Thank you, Gary.
I'd like to have you start, please, by distinguishing the Democrats from the GOP and ask to further clarify this distinction. You wrote and tweeted that Republicans are energized by money and greed and Democrats are compromised by money and greed. In practical terms, what is the difference here between being energized and compromised? And although we know the Republicans have no sincere contract with Americans, wasn't during the Clinton years that the Democratic Party started its long betrayal of American citizens by pushing to the party to be near the corporate right? The form is yours.
Well, it's the influence of money. The Democrats crossed that line abruptly in about 1979. When Tony Coelho, the Democratic congressman from California, who was in charge of the House of Representatives Democratic fundraising, said to the Democrats, why are we letting the Republicans get all that corporate money, campaign money? We can go and to their PAC parties in Washington, PAC, Political Action Committee, and we can raise a lot of money. And they bought it. And that was the beginning of the end. That was just before Reagan took over. And then you could just see the decline in congressional hearings on issues of concern to people where they live, work, and raise their families. You could see the law and order regulatory agencies, the FDA, the EPA, the Auto Safety Agency, the FAA, deteriorate their watchdog function, their law enforcement function. And what did the Democrats get from this? They started losing more and more elections. When money controls both parties, there's a race to the bottom. And you can never beat the Republicans in terms of the race to the bottom. And that led to the loss of state legislatures, governorships. That led to gerrymandering districts more and more. And then the collapse of 2010 under Obama, the election, they lost over 30 state legislatures and governorships to the Republicans. And that meant more gerrymandering and more vicious circle entrenching these corporatists who like to call themselves conservatives, but they're not. They're corporatists, Republicans. And we lost control of Congress. So this book on the ramparts and a companion book just out, which is a fable designed to make people laugh themselves so seriously that they organize Congress watchdog groups in congressional districts. The book is a fable, but it's a real powerful civic tool nonetheless. It's called How the Rats Reformed the Congress, and you can get an autographed copy by going to ratsreformcongress.org. And there you will get a tutorial on how to actually create these watchdog groups and even summons your senators and representatives to your own town meetings, your own agendas, your own felt concerns for your neighborhood, community, state, region, country, world. And so an interesting thing, Gary, about this book, we've written very serious nonfiction books about Congress called Who Runs Congress in the 1970s, the biggest selling books ever in American history on Congress. you couldn't get a publisher now interested in it. So I had to resort to the fable technique. And there is a rat infestation in Congress, and these rats in the fable come up into the toilet bowls of the Speaker of the House and others, and you can imagine the outcry and the publicity and the derision as they try to stamp out this rat infestation in Congress. And then some activists say, hey, you know, more and more people around the country are now paying attention to Congress because of the derision and the satire on late network TV shows. And so they organize, and the organizing aspects become very, very nonfiction and realistic. So we hope. What's interesting about this, Gary, is we're getting orders for five at a time for how the rats reformed the Congress at ratsreformcongress.org. And I'm saying, why are they ordering five at a time, albeit there's a discount? And could it be that they're now having living room meetings? Could it be that they are giving them out to teachers or libraries? Or could it be that they're book collectors because they want first edition autographs? I have no idea. But we've never had that experience. Instead of just ordering one from ratsreformcongress.org, they're ordering multiple copies. So I try to say it's easier than we think, people, to take control of Congress from the corporatists, from big business, from Wall Street, from the kind of devastating output and inaction of Congress. It's affecting the world, affecting your livelihood, just as you described it a few minutes ago, Gary. And it's a hard time getting people to believe that. And you say, look, you know, I did a book called Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. And I have actual examples. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, where less than 1% of the people organized in congressional districts backed by public opinion. That's key. What Abraham Lincoln called the public sentiment turned around Congress, regardless how powerful and omnipresent the corporate lobbyists are. We've done it with the auto industry. We've done a lot with the matters dealing with air and water pollution. Up against these big corporations, once the people organize back home, it's over. You beat them. They have to either adjust or be displaced. And it's amazing how hard it is to get that lesson across. And I think part of it is because as students, we grow up being educated into powerlessness. There are very few legitimate civics courses. We don't learn civic skills in middle school or high school, although they're very easy to use and learn. Like how do you use the Free Information Act to get files from the government on nursing home inspections, meat and poultry plant inspections, or things that corporations don't want us to know? That's not hard to learn. We teach it in a high school in Connecticut in just a few hours and have the students write the state of Connecticut departments and ask for certain information. So on the ratsreformcongress.org, there is this education in how to form civic organizations around long overdue changes and reforms, living wage, full Medicare for all, free choice of doctor and hospital, cracking down on corporate crime and abuses, billing frauds, abuses against consumers, workers, voters, suppression, all that. It's easy to teach that, but not when boards of education are worried about calls from the Chamber of Commerce or from some large company saying, what are you doing with these students? And, of course, the answer is we're educating them to be active citizens, to work our democracy for a better future for our country, Ralph, and the world. That's not enough.
Ralph, how did Obama contribute to this erosion of democracy and betrayal of the people's contract that opened the door for Trump to enter? And I'm displeased that Pelosi was reelected as the House Speaker. It indicates, at least from my perspective, that the Democrats are still unwilling to change, given all the public polls that show Americans demand a new agenda that you're discussing how we do it in Washington.
Well, what he did was he just, I called it the Bush-Obama years. He extended what Bush did. in many areas, like a military foreign policy, expanded to drones, expanded becoming a prosecutor, judge, jury, executioner, cover-upper. He had a terrible Food and Drug Administration, probably as bad, if not worse, than even Trump's today. He sold billions of dollars of weapons to countries in the world to oppress their people. He didn't prosecute a single crook on Wall Street. That cost him a lot of votes, by the way, after the Wall Street collapse of the economy and unemployed 8 million workers and dissolving so much of the assets of pension funds and mutual funds, savings by the American people. He didn't prosecute any of them. And he also took more money from Wall Street for his political campaign than John McCain, far more money. So he was good rhetorically. He was better in some of the regulatory areas, like EPA than Trump is, or Department of Interior on public lands than Trump is. But the net result was he lost his own party's control of Congress. And so he was battling the Republicans the rest of his 8 years and not getting much done. Well, that's what happens when you become a corporatist. Now, the Democrats won more seats last month, and they won on more of a progressive agenda. So now maybe they say, you know, being progressive is going to win us politics more than just grabbing money from corporate political action committees. And there are about 25 new members that I think we could be proud of. I think they're going to try to shake up the House, and we're going to be working with them to get investigative hearings in every single direction, because all these House committees have these budgets and staff, and the Republicans just had them sleep, just collecting their checks, representing the corporate lobby. So now we're going to see, after many years, a lot of news coverage of congressional hearings in the corrupt military contracting budget, the whole inverted, grotesque tax system, consumer protection, environment issues, massive corporate crime waves, corporate welfare giveaways. And if the Democrats don't do that, they're going to pay the price at the polls, because what these new members have done, even though they're still in the minority, is they're raising expectation levels of people, regardless of whether they're conservatives or liberals, that Congress is going to work for them. And once you raise people's expectation levels, it's hard to send them back to where they were.
Good point. Final point is, there are times when I even wonder whether Americans truly want democracy, because democracy requires an effort to be made by the populace. Instead, people just want to pass the buck to their elected officials. Isn't this one of the fundamental reasons why we have turned into an oligarchy?
Yes, of course. I mean, it comes back to people not spending enough time practicing their democratic rights to get what they want. And for some reason, they give up on themselves. As I said, in the educational system, they don't exactly produce vigorous, optimistic civic activists and participants. And so they give up on themselves when they realize that their first effort to fight City Hall or to elect someone fails. Then cynicism sets in. They give up on themselves. They say, pox on all your houses. I'm not into politics. I'm just going to go back to my private life. And my answer is, you're not into politics? Guess what? Politics is into you, whether you like it or not, and in a very, very unfavorable manner. So look at what the politicians are doing to you on behalf of their corporate paymasters. And so we really have to have a lot of conversations. We have to have the 1% of the population that's fairly politically active in this country, all over the country. We know them. We hear them in restaurants or town meetings and so on. And they've just got to have much stronger conversations with people to get them more self-reliant, to get them to have a higher estimate of their own significance as citizens. Because without civic activity, there's no democracy. There's just a parchment called, you know, the Constitution or Freedom of Information Act. If you don't use it, you lose it. Even though there's no, you know, sudden declaration of plummeting into a plutocratic oligarchy, you lose it day by day. They grind you under, they discourage you, you become cynical, you withdraw, you don't go out to vote, you don't run for local office, and it becomes a vicious circle. So that's why I did this humorous approach, How the Rats Reformed the Congress. I dedicated it, you'll like this, Gary, to Voltaire and Mark Twain.
Yeah, I like that.
You can get it by going to ratsreformcongress.org. Autographed, ready to be used, ready for that key citizen summons, where you, with 500 clear signatures on a petition to your senators, will get your senator to your own town meeting in a public auditorium or a school auditorium. Imagine that. That's all it takes. They have to clearly sign their name, put their contact numbers, what they are, teacher, mechanic, truck driver, lawyer, doctor, and you will get a senator. And then you got direct eyeball to eyeball, no flacks in the way, no unanswered calls to members of Congress, no unanswered emails. You got the member right there. Remember, there's only 535 of them. They put their shoes on every morning the way you and I do. It's the smallest branch of government, and it's the most powerful branch of government under our Constitution that can turn around the government, affect state governments and local governments. So you've got that huge lever, people. And remember, the Constitution doesn't start with we, the Congress. It doesn't start with we, the corporation. It starts with we, the people. A corporation and company don't even appear in the Constitution. And with that tremendous power, the sovereign power of the people, how can you not use it? How can you not deploy it for your children and your grandchildren? And so,
well said.
I write these books, you know, to be used, right, Gary?
I agree, and the new book is To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course. The website is csrl.org. Ralph, thanks again for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary. Thank your listeners. Bye-bye now.
We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening in today. And once again, if you, because I was asked to give the number out again slowly, so here's the number if you'd like to join us to help WBAI and your own health for a retreat at the end, the last week of April, the first week of May. It's 1 or 2 weeks, 903-881-7008. Look forward to sharing tomorrow with you. Have a nice day, everyone.